Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. And for the second time on my podcast, I sit down with Boston Celtics All-Star guard Isaiah Thomas. A lot has changed in his life, his career, since we visited a little over a year ago. He has quite simply transformed himself into one of the elite guards in the NBA and one of really the most exciting, thrilling players. A must-watch every night for the Celtics. He has dominated the fourth quarter of games this season. He's scoring 28.5 points a game, and the Celtics are winning. We talked about his relationship with his childhood idol, Allen Iverson, his visits on the sidelines watching Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, and what's next for him, which in his mind is, quite simply, becoming the franchise player on a championship-level team. Here's my conversation with Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah, welcome back, man. My first repeat podcast player, man. Thanks for doing this, especially on a game day.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right. This matter of business to start with. There's a Seattle guy a little upset with you. Saw you wearing your Seahawks sweatshirt in Atlanta before the Seahawks-Falcons playoff game when the Celtics were down there. Then sees you 2 days later at Gillette Stadium wearing your Brady jersey on the field. A, guess which Seattle guy is pissed about it, and B, explain yourself.
It has to be Spencer Hawes.
That's accurate, yes.
Spencer Hawes. B is, I mean, I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm from that area. I went to go support them at their practice. They invited me to their practice, and then the next day I come back to Boston and Patriots, they invite me to their game. And Tom Brady has sent me a signed jersey a week before. And that's all it was. I was supporting my friends. That's all it is. I'm a Seahawks fan. I'm from that area. But when I'm around Boston, I got to support these guys because they support me as well.
As a fan, was that Super Bowl loss, as a fan, the worst?
It definitely was. It definitely was. And then it just hurt a lot of people when I did that. Everybody was talking about it on Twitter. When you're a bandwagon fan, it's like, I'm not a bandwagon fan. I'm just supporting guys that are friends of mine, and I like the Seahawks. So that's what it was.
And you're part of the Boston sports landscape now.
Yeah.
Like people, they've got to accept that, right?
So I go to Red Sox game, I wear Red Sox gear. And then when I'm back in Seattle, I go to Mariners games and I support those guys. So I'm just in the middle. I guess I'm stuck in the middle.
Watching Brady, the Patriots didn't play their best last week, but when you're around that kind of greatness and you sort of get to know those guys a little bit, what's it like on the field watching a Brady, a Russell Wilson? Especially you play the quarterback position in basketball. What you watch the game differently when you're down on the field than maybe somebody else might?
Yes, I do. I watch how they prepare. I mean, I've been to Seahawks practices where I just dial in on Russell Wilson. You could tell why he's so good. He's always prepared. He's the one going 110%, even if it's through a walkthrough. And then when I got to see Tom last week, just how he was preparing in warmups, you could just tell he's different than everybody else. He's just so locked in and dialed in on what he needs to do for that game. And that's the difference between the good players and the great players. When you walk in somewhere, you can just feel something different around those type of players. And that's what I want on to be translated on the basketball floor for me.
Especially Brady at 39 years old. Is there part of you when you're watching going, this guy's almost 40?
And he doesn't look like it. I mean, he looks like he's getting better the older he gets, kind of like how Steve Nash was for the MVP years. But I'm trying to surround myself by those type of players just so they can rub their greatness off on me and I can figure out how to have a long and successful career like they did.
We're taping this on Wednesday here today, the Knicks game. And Celtics, you guys are playing great. You're having a run of fourth quarters in a season unlike anyone's had in 20 years in the league. But, like, to me, you can always measure where a guy is standing sort of in the Boston sports landscape is when you're walking into North Station, you take the tee to the game, and there's all those, the guys who sell the t-shirts on the stands, right? And it's like Screw Goodell t-shirts, whatever. But the rest of them are Isaiah Thomas. Do you take the tee into the game? Do you see all those stands? Like, because if you're, because usually it's Brady Ortiz, and now it's Brady Ortiz, and it's Isaiah Thomas.
I don't take the tee into the game, but my parents have, My wife does, and they tell me about it. So it when I do see things like that, it doesn't seem real. It's like things I've always dreamed of, and then to be next to Tom Brady, who's a great, one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, David Ortiz, one of the best baseball players to ever play, like that says I'm going in the right direction. I guess I just got to try to get another banner, and hopefully I can be in the conversation with those guys.
It is a different sports city, and part of it is the success of the teams. Red Sox have won World Series in the last decade. They've won three, and the Patriots have won the Super Bowls, and obviously the Celtics' history. In the time you've been here now, what have you learned about this place, the way they embrace their stars, that I don't know if it's different than anywhere else, but it's pretty unique in its own way?
They expect greatness. They've seen it all. I said this, I think, at Media Day, I said, just getting to the first round isn't enough. Like, just getting to the playoffs isn't enough for these fans. They expect greatness. And if you show them greatness, if you give it your all each and every time you're out there, they're going to fall in love with you. And since I've been here, that's kind of been what's happened with me. It's like I've just played my normal game and gave it my all. And these fans just brought me in with open arms, and they treat me like I've been here for 10 years, or like I've won a championship. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like if someday soon I can bring a banner to Boston.
You guys get swept by the Cavs last year in the playoffs, but you're walking off the court after game four and the place just erupts. That stay with you? Had you ever seen anything, felt anything like that? Did you expect it?
I never seen anything like that. That's when I knew, like, this city, this sports city was different than any other. Like, when we get swept by the Cavaliers and then you expect them to maybe even boo, they just stand up and I think they start saying, let's go Celtics. And it was something that I've never seen before, like a standing ovation for getting swept.
When you got traded here, your namesake, Isaiah Thomas, said to you essentially, you're going to find that this is the perfect place for you. You're going to find that you love this place. Do you think about that sometimes? Because he was sort of, I think, maybe the first one to sort of kind of align your thinking of, hey, this might be a good thing for my career. This might be a good thing for me.
I think about it all the time, because he was the first one to actually call me and text me right when I got traded. And he said those exact words as you said. He also said, this is going to change your career. And I didn't know where he was coming from with this. I was getting so many text messages and calls and about me getting traded. But I just, when I sat back that night and called him back, and he's like, trust me on this. This is the best basketball decision for your career that have been made, and taking a run with it. You're going to finally see what a real organization is like in this league. And everything he said has come to life.
Isaiah, averaging 28.5 points a game, you're shooting threes. Certainly you've added to your game as a consistency from the three-point line. To everyone else, it's been a pretty dramatic jump. You've gotten better every year. Does it feel to you like it's just a natural progression you've made each year? Or does something this year feel like I've taken a really big jump?
It feels natural. I mean, every year I try to figure out what I need to get better at, going to the off season, trying to focus on those things I need to get better at. And this was just another summer. This was another summer coming off my biggest year, an all-star year. And I knew that people thought last year was somewhat luck. I knew that people thought, okay, he just had a pretty good year, and he having to fall into an all-star selection and things like that. But it wasn't luck. That's hard work and dedication. And I took that to another level this summer, to where I was using that as motivation. Like, I got to come back even better. Like, I got to get better and show these people that I'm for real, and I'm not playing around. And that's all it is. And then adding Al Horford, adding a couple more pieces to this team has made it a lot easier for me, but at the same time, I've put in the work, and what I'm doing this season as a team and as an individual, I expect that out of myself.
The dominance in the fourth quarters for you, you're averaging 10 points in the fourth this season. Over the last 20 years in the league, you're on a run unlike what anyone has done. Does it feel like I'm just on a great run right now, or this is the player I become? It's like two separate things, right?
It's definitely two separate things. I feel like this is just what it is. Like, this, it's not a hot run. When I end games, I'm like, man, I could have done so much more. Like, that's just the confidence level and what I feel as an individual. But I feel like this is what it's going to be. I mean, we're 41 or 42 games into the season. Usually at about this time, this is how players are going to play for the rest of the year. And I want to remain that. I want to remain playing at a high level. And I want to be that fourth quarter guy. So, like I've said before, I just embrace that moment. When the fourth quarter comes, I don't treat it like, oh man, I gotta perform. It's just, that's my job in the fourth quarter.
Brad Stevens, your coach, he's kept your minutes down. You've been fresh in the fourth. You're averaging, I think, just under 34 minutes a game. Did he kind of lay out to you, this is how we're going to do it, or did it just kind of evolve that way based on his feel for where your energy was at the end of the games? How do you think you guys got to that number? He got to that number.
There was a point in the season, I think we took a loss. I think it was the Golden State. And then I had said something in the media about us giving up, players and coaches as well. And then we had a talk that night. And I just felt like whatever he has to do, I want to play in the fourth quarter. So whatever you have to do the first through third quarter, figure out the rotations, I want to play in that fourth quarter as many minutes as I can. And we just agreed on that. And I'm not saying he's going to play me the whole fourth quarter, but he found a rotation that to where I start the fourth quarters. And then he just sees how my wind is, and he sees where I'm playing and how I'm playing and how our team's playing. And he goes from there. So Brad is a very smart coach that I always say that he always says, my door is open if you ever need to talk. And a lot of coaches say that. And then when you go in and talk to him, it's something different. Like, he really doesn't think he knows it all. So he always asks questions about not just my minutes, but what do I see out there? And that's our relationship. So that was just a conversation we had that he's changed the rotation a little bit to where I can play a little more in the fourth quarter.
Was he pissed off at all after you said that about you felt the players gave up and the coaches gave up? Did he want you to explain to him what you meant by it? Do you think he understood it? Was he upset at all by that?
He wasn't upset because he knows where my heart is, and he knows I'm a competitor and I just want to win. He always says, before you go talk to me, take a breather and really, like, let your emotions go. And I didn't do that. Like, I was reacting off emotion, and that's the thing I wish I could have took back, because me and Brad talk all the time, whether it be text, phone calls, or in his office, and we have a better relationship than that. But when I called him that night when we got to Detroit and we talked on the phone, he's like, I'm not upset at you. I mean, I wish you handled it a different way, but I know where your heart is and I know what you want for this team.
You said Brad doesn't feel like he knows it all. He likes to get a lot of ideas from a lot of places. He kind of is the first guy to say, I'm not sure I have a system. I like to take from everywhere. And other coaches in the league will say, you know, Brad will take what they do, a play they run or something, and incorporate it. Do you ever bring end of game plays to him or out of timeout? Have you brought anything to him ever to put in where he said, yeah, that might work? If not, nah, that's for this reason, it won't work.
I haven't. I think that's my next step as a point guard and as a leader, seeing what he thinks of different types of players or different types of situations throughout the game. He's such a smart coach. I kind of leave that to him. Or, like, throughout the games, I would throw a play in his ear to be like, oh, maybe we can run this. And then sometimes he'll be like, nah, we'll save that for later. Or sometimes he'll be like, good idea, let's run it. And then we'll go from there. So that's how our relationship is. But I think as a point guard and a leader, that's probably my next step of going to coach and just giving him ideas more often.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Isaiah, sit tight for a moment so I can tell my listeners about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a very long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that make it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Isaiah, unlike you recently, I do not have Tom Brady leaving me tickets for playoff games, but I did go on SeatGeek this week and pick up two tickets for that AFC championship game on Sunday against Pittsburgh. My son's a big Tom Brady fan, big Patriot fan. That's why I've got that SeatGeek app on my phone, and that's why I use it often, because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to bamboozle you with big fees on the checkout page. Now listen closely to this next part, because it's really important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So please support SeatGeek the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ today. Now back to our guest, Isaiah Thomas. What was the tweak you made this summer in your three-point shot, the way you released the ball? Was it subtle? Was it something that you had seen on film last year? You changed something about your release.
First off, I'm more disciplined in my shot. In my previous years, I would fade away, I would kick my leg out, I would not keep my follow through up. So all summer I just worked on trying to be as straight up and down as possible, keeping my follow through up every time I shoot. And also I wanted to get the ball in my shooting pocket a lot quicker. So that's one of the biggest things that I worked on, getting my 1-2 step quicker and getting the ball in my shooting pocket, whether I'm coming off the dribble, whether I'm coming off a pick and roll, always being shot ready. So that's something that I worked on all summer, I think it's helped, because no matter if a big is up off a pick and roll or a guard is up, I'm always thinking anywhere I am on this court, I can be shot ready and be able to shoot and make the shot, not just take the shot.
Do you think you've gone, or you're in the process of going from, I think it used to be with you, hey, he's a great little player, he's great for a little guy, to he's a great player.
Yeah.
Is there a difference in how you're perceived? Is that an actual step that you think in perception that exists out there?
It's getting there. There's still those people that say he's good, but he's not a franchise player. He's not this, he's not that. It's like there's always going to be people who say those type of things, but it's getting there. I mean, the more my peers, like guys like LeBron James and say that I'm a really good basketball player, I think people will start to fall in line, but it's not there yet, but it's going in the right direction of them taking that little guy factor out and not even looking at my height and looking at me as one of the best players in the world.
It's always been a process for you, a step of, okay, he's this, but he's not that. And then you become that, but he's not that yet. And it went from whether it was scholarship player to will he get drafted to can he start in the NBA to, okay, now he's starting, but can you really build around him? We got to upgrade. Okay, but is he a franchise? Like, the last one, it seems, is now, is he a franchise guy? Is he a franchise player in Boston? Because for some people, they won't accept, maybe it's the size, whether they look past the production. Is that the last one for you? Is he a franchise guy?
That probably is. And like you said, it's every level, it's something new. Me and my wife were actually talking about it last night about, like, they tried to put me in a box since I've been in the NBA. 60th pick. Okay, he's not a starter. He's a spark off the bench. He's only good coming off the bench. He's a candidate, one of the best six men there is. It's like they tried to put me in that box since I've gotten drafted, and I knew what I was. I know I'm a franchise player on a championship team. I'm not just a franchise player on any team. Like, that's where I hold myself at. And I'm not trying to sound cocky or overconfident. That's just the work I put in. I know I can be a franchise player on a championship team. So that's probably the next step in trying to prove the critics wrong. And I'm gonna just keep going. Like, there's so much more that I can improve at. So much. There's a level that I want to be at that I'm not even close to at right now. And I'm gonna just keep working and use all those little things that people are saying as motivation. And I'm gonna make them eat their words.
remember last year when we sat down last year and we were talking about Allen Iverson, and you're talking about him as your role model, and you said to me, hey, that's what I aspire to. I want to be able to dominate the league the way he did. And I remember saying to myself, listen, that's exactly the way you should think, but I'm not sure he's going to be that. And then a year later, you look and you go, okay, like you're there. You look at the numbers. I saw there was, imagine you might have saw it. Somebody did a comparison recently at the same age of Allen and the numbers, and they were better. They were more efficient in a lot of ways. Now, he did it over obviously a very long time, but feels like your ability has always been to not put limits on yourself. And you mentioned Nash. I don't know if there's ever been a player in pro sports who got that much better in his 30s, like in his 30s, like except for like steroid home run hitters.
Yeah.
I don't think Steve was on steroids. Didn't look like it. Yeah. But the capacity, though, to get better as you get older, like it takes, I think, a lot of mental toughness because you get labeled in this league and then you can start believing. Maybe the limits that everyone else says are real. Yeah. I just don't think you've ever allowed yourself to accept limits.
I think that's one of my biggest strengths. People always try to put me in a box. People always trying to limit what I can do. And I know what I'm capable of. Like every year, they always say something. And I just continue to fight that battle, continue to keep going because I know what I want. I know what goals I lay out for myself, what team goals I lay out for my team. And like I've told you before, like now it's like I wanted to be one of the best little guards ever. I want to be one of the best guards to ever play the game. Like that's what motivates me to just keep going. And when I sat down and talked to Allen Iverson this summer, it's like that changed my whole mindset. Like I told you I wanted to be Allen Iverson last year and I meant that, but sitting down and really talking to him and him telling me like, you're cut from the same cloth as me. Like, and I'm not just saying that. Like, and I see that in you. I watch all your games. And it's like, nobody can tell me anything anymore. Like, that's my favorite player of all time. One of the best guards, pound for pound, to ever play the game. For him to say that, I'm going to just keep going. Like, I feel like I can reach any goal that I set out for myself. And I feel like anything's reachable, whether that be MVP, whether that be All-Star MVP, whether that be an NBA championship, and that's the confidence he gave me with just sitting down and talking to him for 30 minutes to an hour this past summer.
I had the story last week about Allen's going to be a player coach in Ice Cube's 3-on-3 league. You're going to be at one of those games this summer. I know you're going to find your way to one of those.
Definitely. Anything Allen Iverson, I'm going to be there. I support my guy like he supports me.
It's amazing to me, too, with him. He is still more – there's guys who are stars in his league who I don't think there's as much interest in as anything Allen would still do now. That his popularity – he hasn't played in 5 years. He's been out 5 years plus, really. And what is it about him, do you think, that just – people are going to go watch him play, like at least initially, and see can Allen – you know, like if it's Allen against Chauncey Billups or whatever in some 3-on-3. What is it about him, the magnetism of him that just – people still can't get enough of that guy.
He changed the whole generation of basketball, like by being himself, by being a little guy who just did it his way. Everybody's kind of shocked by how he did that. Like there's Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is the greatest player to ever play. And everybody wants to be Mike, but they can't. Everybody's not going to be 6'6". A normal person can somewhat relate to Allen Iverson because he's small. They said he wouldn't be what he is. And then just like the braids, the tattoos, the baggy shorts, his shoes, the arm sleeves, like it just still goes on. And like you said, he hasn't played in 5 years. Everybody wants to know what Allen Iverson's doing. Everybody believes he can still play. Like just because it's Allen Iverson, it's like it's never been a guy like that that changed it the way people think, the way people look at a professional athlete. It's like when I see him, I'm still like, man, like Allen Iverson knows who I am. Like that, it doesn't even seem real because I looked up to him. I used to watch every game he played and I wanted to be just like him. And for him to even call me on my phone, it doesn't seem real.
What would he be like in an NBA now with the way the defensive rules have changed? Guys couldn't stay in front of him and they could hand check him and get their hands on him. What would he do in this pro game now?
I mean, he was unguardable then. He would probably averaged close to 40 points a game. I mean, he got fouled every time. He was coming at you every time, and you can't touch him now? Like, I can only imagine. I can only imagine. He would be even more of a killer than he was.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Isaiah, we'll get back to our conversation in a minute. But first, I've got to ask my listeners a question. If you could get 3 home-cooked meals for free, would you sign up for it? Well, of course you would. Well, all you've got to do is remember my name, Woj, and you can do exactly that. Now keep listening, and I'll tell you how to get those free meals. We all know that there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients and all of it right to your doorstep. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients, and it can all be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Now listen closely, because this is the part about the 3 free meals I was just telling you about. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/woj. Think about that. That's 3 meals free just by typing in my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/woj, W-O-J. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our guest, Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah, you made the All-Star team last year, and I remember this time last year, maybe a couple weeks earlier, it was, you know, you and Reggie Jackson maybe fighting for the last spot. Now it's, can you be a starter with the way the voting's changed? Obviously, the fan voting is combined now with media and the players. Is starting important to you? Is that the next step for you to get voted in as a starter? You got Kyle Lowry, you've got Kyrie Irving, you're in pretty rarefied air in the East, trying to get a spot, DeMar DeRozan.
That is. I mean, that's important to me. That's one of the goals I set out for myself going into this season. I mean, that's something that I really want. And I know a lot of people might not feel like it's important for them, but it's definitely important for me. It's something that I want and that I've worked for, and I feel like I put myself in a good position to achieve that goal, but you can only control so much, and if I'm not a starter, it'll be all right. It's not the end of the world, but that is something that is important to me.
When you think back, bigger accomplishment, 2016 making the NBA All-Star game, or 2006 making the ABCD All-American Camp All-Star team?
Those are both big accomplishments. I mean, All-Star game was definitely one of my biggest. I mean, because nobody ever thought that would happen but myself and the people who support me.
06, when you were at, you know, Teaneck, the old ABCD camp, you were able to get an invite from Sonny Vaccaro to get there.
Yeah.
Who were the big point guards that year there? Derrick Rose was the guy, right?
Yeah.
But then the other group that were, quote, you know, rated ahead of you were who?
Johnny Flynn, Corey Fisher, Mike Conley, Brandon Jennings, James Harden was there, O.J. Mayo, Edwin Rios.
Bill Walker was a big.
Bill Walker.
He was a physical specimen.
He was like the Vince Carter of high school. Man, the list, that ABCD camp, Lance Stevenson, that's the year he blew up.
I remember being at that camp. I remember Lance's dad.
Yeah.
He was pretty vocal.
He was vocal.
Remember, you'd hear him wherever you were in the gym, right?
Anytime Lance had a game, it felt like the whole state of New York was there. I mean, he can do a regular move, and they were going crazy. But that camp was the best camp I've ever been to in my life. And I talk about it all the time with my guy Lonzo. We talk about how the players that made it to the NBA, the players that were highly recruited and top ranked players that are not in the NBA now. It's crazy how things change.
And at that time, you heard everybody knew who O.J. Mayo was, Bill Walker. They were physically so far, and you see that in a lot of classes. And O.J. had a good pro career, got in the league, was drafted high, and Bill Walker was around a little bit, yeah. And then a lot of D-League. But when you think back, just how physically advanced some guys are at that age, and I would imagine when you were there, you're trying to measure. Mike Conley was a big name. You know, he played with Greg Oden. Everybody knew him. And, you know, you mentioned Lance Stephenson and obviously, you know, James Harden from Artesia. Was that whole week for you when you think back of how do I close the gap on these guys? And was that the first time you said, hey, I can play with them. I can play with anybody. Was that the first time it hit you that maybe I am good enough to do this?
That probably was the first time it hit me because that was the first time I was around such talented players like that. Like being back home in high school, there might be a few talented players here and there, but you're for the most part better than everybody. So when I got invited to ABCD camp, it was like my first game was against Mike Conley and Greg Oden. I mean, on my team, I had me, Kevin Love, and Lance Thomas, who plays for the Knicks. My first game, so that was like, welcome to the stage. You know, Greg Oden was arguably the best player in regardless of class. And then, like I said, the list goes on. I played against Johnny Flynn, James Harden, Brandon Jennings was a big name. Corey Fisher was one of New York's finest. Like it was
with the Villanova.
Yeah, it was every game was stacked. And then you had Derrick Rose and OJ Mayo and those type of guys that just it was an unbelievable camp. Like when you left that camp, you knew, okay, you're one of the best players in the country to get invited to that camp because there's so many future NBA players. Like at the All-Star game, Jay-Z was there. Like they invited Jay-Z. We were wearing S. Dark Carters at that time. It was like, I remember Jason Kidd came and watched an OJ Mayo game. Like it was the place you wanted to be at for sure.
What was Harden like then? Play exactly the same way?
Nah, he wasn't. You wouldn't think he was going to be what he is now, but he was definitely good. He was smooth. He left-handed. He can shoot. He can make plays, but I don't think anybody thought he would be, I mean, arguably the best guard in the world.
What Harden and Westbrook have done with the triple doubles, it seems like the other night we're at the Garden and against Charlotte, you're getting the MVP chance down the stretch. You close out another big fourth quarter. And I think if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll be, you know, there's five, you know, people can vote 1 through 5 and you're going to have vote, you know, how many you have, who knows? It's going to depend on how you finish the year, how the team does. But have the triple doubles changed, do you think, the way with what Harden and Westbrook are doing with triple doubles? All of a sudden that's become the measure. And I've seen both of them. They're going back in games late to chase, especially James has this year at times, big leads, go back in, they get a couple more assists or a couple more rebounds and pad it, which it's still unbelievable what they're doing. Yeah. It's not, but it's just, has that skewed, do you think people, the triple-double skewed the thinking of, well, whoever has the most is the MVP? It seems like it's become a bigger part of the conversation for that award than anybody ever paid attention to before.
I think you're 100% right. I mean, it's definitely become a bigger topic. And like, if you're getting triple-doubles, you're definitely going to be in the MVP conversation. Not taking anything against those guys because Westbrook is something we haven't seen, I don't think, ever. And then James Harden is just, he's special. Like me and Nate Robinson always talk about who will we pay to go see play. Like that's when we're talking about the guy is really good. And those two are guys that I would pay to go see play if I wasn't in the NBA. But I think it is a little, it's paid attention to more and more than I think it should be. But I mean, you can't take away from what those guys are doing. Like triple double. I've only had one in my career and that was hard to get. So for them to do it every other night is something special.
Trying to find your place and what you do unique. There's so many great guards in this league who do it in so many different ways. The two guys we're just talking about, Steph Curry, you know, go down the list, you know, the Chris Pauls. There are very few elite teams Kyrie Irving who don't have a great point guard. But so many guys doing it in so many different ways. Is that the thing now? What is it about my game that's going to separate me from everybody else? And to figure out what that is, to hone in on it, and then to sort of deliver it night in and night out and sort of not try to be anybody else. But is that a challenge when you're looking around trying to figure out how do I stand out in this league?
It's definitely a challenge. I mean, because like you just said, that's like 100% right. Like every point guard is different if you think about it. Like in their own way, like nobody really plays the same way. You know, it's a scoring league and there's more scoring point guards more than anything now in the NBA. It's like you got to be able to score to be effective, but every point guard does it differently. Like now that I think about it, and for me, I'm a fan of the game, so I watch all the other point guards. I watch NBA every day, and I try to take little bits and pieces from them other guys that put in my game, but at the same time, knowing what I'm really good at and knowing what I want to be great at and doing it my own way when I'm out there on the floor. So, I mean, I think that's about just being competitive and wanting to be great and wanting to be better than them other guys, but at the same time, knowing you definitely got to take bits and pieces from them other top point guards' games.
And in a year or two, not just that position, but Kristaps Porzingis, how unique he is, the Greek freak. You know, these guys are doing things at their size and position that we haven't seen. And yet here, I imagine it's got to be rewarding. You're the fourth quarter guy this year, and it's Celtics have a game, fourth quarter alert. Here comes Isaiah. You turn on the shows after the game. It's fourth quarter in Boston. Guess what? He did it again. I would imagine it's got to be pretty gratifying to have found that, because what else would you want to be known for?
Yeah.
To be a guy making big plays and shots in winning time.
I mean, that's what I dreamed of when I was a little boy. I mean, watching Michael Jordan, watching Kobe Bryant, watching Allen Iverson, like when those moments came, they, for the most part, always took advantage of them and was ready. And they always executed down the stretch, and they were just so focused and so locked in. And I always wanted to be that type of player where when stuff hits the fan and guys are a little timid, like, give me the ball. I make something happen. And I always say I just stay in the moment. No matter if I'm missing shots, no matter if I'm not making the right play, it's like I work so hard on my craft that I believe in the process. I trust the process, and I trust my work. So no matter if I miss 10 shots that night or in that fourth quarter, I feel like that next shot is going down because I've worked on that next shot. And I think it's just a confidence level in that fourth quarter with me that I just take advantage of that moment.
Between now and the All-Star game, you're opening up a court in Tacoma. People always, you're in that Seattle mafia, you and Jamal, the whole group of guys who came, played in Seattle, but you're a Tacoma guy. And I know you want to differentiate that sometimes.
Yes.
It's Tacoma's obviously a suburb of Seattle. It's its own city, but you're going to have something kind of similar to what Jamal Crawford's done in Seattle, right?
Yeah. I'm opening up a court in Tacoma, a gym named after myself, and something I've always wanted to do, and it's going to be special. It's happening in February, right around the time we hit the West Coast trip. So it's something that I've always wanted to do, something that's always been in my heart to the city that I'm from. And also, like you said, looking at guys like Jamal Crawford doing what he does for the city of Seattle, I'm following those footsteps and trying to do that for the city of Tacoma. And I'm just going to keep going and keep giving back to the community that raised me and made me into the young man that I am to this day. And it's definitely a stepping stone for me and something that is close to my heart.
Isaiah, man, listen, thanks again for doing this back to back on the pod. I appreciate you making a return.
Thank you. This is the best podcast I've ever been a part of. And I thank you for having me again.
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, Boston Celtics All-Star guard Isaiah Thomas. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us at thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Play. And you can hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, SeatGeek and Blue Apron. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.